After escaping the pub, they were all up and stumbling, running down the cobblestoned alley, the mist still dense around them and the smell of garbage like perfume compared to the stench fading with merciful speed behind them.
Very efficient, though I'm not so sure I'd call it humane, even if no one is killed.
Aye, mate.
John Tom clung tightly to his staff, using it for support as they slowed a little. Mudge jogged steadily alongside him, behind the long-legged stranger. Occasionally, he gave a worried, disgusted glance back over his shoulder to check for possible pursuit. None materialized.
Indecent it is. You only wish you were dead. It'd be that way in every town, though. 'Tis clean and there's no caterwauling after about accidental death or police brutalness and such. There's worse things than taking an occasional sword in the side, though. Like puking to death. Makes it a good thing for the skunks, though. I've never seen one of those black and white awful that lacked a good job in any township. 'Tis a brother and sisterhood sort of a comradeship they have. Which is well for them, since none of the common folk care for their companionship. They keep the peace, I suppose, and keep to themselves. And keep in mind, mate, that we were clean across the room from them. Those by the front will likely not touch food for days. Never could stand them myself, either. I don't like cops, and I cannot abide anyone who fights with his rear end.
This way!
They turned up a branch of the alleyway. Mist covered everything, slickened walls, cobblestones, and trash underfoot. They plunged onward, heedless of falling. John Tom was grateful for the time he'd spent on the basketball court and for the unusual stride that enabled him to keep up with the hyperactive Mudge and their racing and still identityless savior.
They took the main passage. This should be safe enough.
They emerged on a small side street. Dim will-o'-the-wisp glows came from the warm globes of the street lamps overhead. It was quite dark otherwise, and though the mist curtained the sky, John Tom was certain sunset came and went while they dined in the restaurant. The stranger unwrapped the muffler covering face and neck and let it hang across shoulders and back. Cloak, shirt, and pants were made of the same maroon material, touched with silver thread. The material was neither leather nor cotton, but some mysterious organic hybrid. Pants, boots, and blouse bore further delicate designs of copper thread worked through them, as did the high, almost Napoleonic collar. A slim blade, half foil, half saber, slung neatly from the waist. She stood nearly as tall as Mudge's 5'6", which John Tom had been given to understand was tall for a human woman hereabouts. She turned, still panting from the run, to study them. He was glad of the opportunity to reciprocate. The maroon clothing fit snugly without binding, and the face above it, though expectedly petite, was hard and sharp-featured. The green eyes looked more like Mudge's than his own. They moved with almost equal rapidity over street and alleyway, never ceasing. Her shoulder-length curls shone flame red, not the red-orange of most redheads, but a fiery, flashing crimson that looked in the lamplight like kinky blood. Save for her clothing and the absence of fur and whiskers, she displayed all the qualities of an active otter. Only the pale green eyes softened the savage image. As for the rest of her, he had the damnedest feeling he was seeing a cylindrical candy bar well packed with peanuts. Her voice was as active as her eyes and her body. She turned to Mudge.
Thought I'd never get you out of there. I tried to get you separated, but this great gangling boy was always between us.
I'd appreciate it if you wouldn't refer to me as boy.
He stared unblinkingly at her.
You don't look any older than I am.
I'll change my tune when you've demonstrated the difference to my satisfaction, though I hope more time isn't required. Still, I have to admit that you handled yourself well inside the possum. Clumsy, but efficient. Size can make up for a hell of a lot.
She turned distastefully away from his indelicate stare and looked at Mudge.
How soon can we be rid of it?
I'm afraid we can't, my love. Clotherhamp himself has entrusted him to me tender care.
Clotherhamp, the wizard of the tree?
She looked curiously at John Tom.
Aye. It seems he was casting about for another worldly wizard type, and he came up with this chap John Tom instead. As I said, because I happened to be unlucky enough to stumble into this manifestation, I've been ordered to take care of him. On penalty of curses too horrible to explain, love. At least until he can take better care of himself. But it ain't been too bad. He's a good enough lad, if a trifle naive.
John Tom was beginning to feel a resurgence of the volatility that set off the riot in the Pearl Possum.
Hey now, people, I'm getting a little tired of everyone continually running off a list of my disabilities.
Shut up and do as you're told.
Hey, sister, how'd you like your backside the same color as your hair?
Her right hand suddenly sported a sixth finger. The knife gleamed in the dim light. No longer than her middle finger, it spread twice as broad and displayed an unusual double blade.
And how'd you like to sing about 3 octaves higher?
Please now, Talia.
Mudge hurriedly interposed himself between them.
Think of me, if not else. He's my responsibility. If any harm comes to him while he's in my care, Clotherhump will have me eyed. As to his singing, I've had more than enough for one night. That's what started the trouble in the possum in the first place.
More's the pity for you then, Mudge.
But the blade disappeared with the twist of a wrist, vanishing back inside her right sleeve.
Well, truce on it for you, for now.
I'm not taking any orders from her.
Now, mate, no one said that you must. But you're willing to accept advice, ain't you? That's what I'm here for, after all.
That's true.
But John Tom couldn't keep his eyes off the lethal little lady Mudge called Talia. Her temper considerably mitigated his first feelings toward her. She was no less beautiful for their argument, but it had become the beauty of a rose sealed in glass. Delicacy and attractiveness were still there, but no fragrance, and both untouchable.
That's the second time tonight you've shown concern for me, love. First by helping us flee that unfortunate altercation back in the Pearl Possum, and again, just now, by respecting me wishes and making peace with the lad. I've never known you to be so solicitous of my health, or anyone else's, excepting your precious own. So what's behind the sudden nurse maiden?
You're right about the first, Mudge. Most of the time, you can find your own way to hell, for all I care. Truth is, I needed some help. The Pearl Possum was the nearest and most likely place to find it. You were the first one I saw that I knew, and considering what was going on in there, I didn't have a whole hell of a lot of time to be picky. I do need your help.
She looked hesitantly past at John Tom.
And so I guess I had to put up with him, too.
She looked John Tom over sharply.
In truth, he's an impressive physical specimen.
John Tom stood a little taller.
What I need now are strong backs, not brains.
He lost an inch.
I knew you were needing something, my dear. I couldn't see you giving yourself over to philanthropy. John Tom, meet Talia, and Widdershins likewise.
Charmed.
Likewise. So, the old magic bugger in the show was looking around for an otherworld wizard and got you instead. I can imagine what his reaction must have been.
I don't need this. Nope, I don't need this at all. I'll make my own damn way.
Hold on now, mate. You should think of me too. Everyone, think of poor old Mudge for a change.
When did you ever think of anything else?
Please, love, go easy on the poor lad. 'Tis right you owe him nothing and likewise myself. But consider, he's got a whole new world to try and cope with, and you're not making it any easier.
What have his problems to do with me?
You said that you needed our help, and I suppose we owe you a favor for helping out of that mess back there, or at least for warning us about the police. You can have the use of my back without my affection. At least I can do that without running my mouth.
She almost smiled, flipping away her hair from her eyes. The oil lamp set her curls on fire.
That's fair enough. We've wasted enough time here, and I suppose I've been the one wasting most of it. Follow me.
They trailed her down the street. No strollers were out at this hour on so miserable a night. Rain dripped off tile and wood roofs, trickled metallically down drain pipes and into gutters. Sometimes they passed a sharper, richer echo where drip water plunged into a collection barrel. They'd walked several blocks before she turned into another alleyway. Several yards into the narrow passage, he began to hear a strange yet somehow familiar snuffling noise. It sounded like a drunken hog.
Whoa!
Almost stumbling over something firm and heavy, he looked down and saw an arm, badly decomposed, with the fur falling from forearm and paw. Nude bone projected like soap from one end. Mudge and Talia stopped just ahead. The otter bent over, examining something on the stones. John Tom hurried to join them. Two bodies lay sprawled awkwardly across the damp paving, necklaced by puddles of rainwater. One was that of a squirrel, he assumed by attire to be female, richly dressed in a pleated gown puffed up like a cloud by a series of lace petticoats. Long ruffled sleeves covered each gray-furred arm. Nearby lay a feathered, broad-brimmed hat, torn and broken. She was half a foot shorter than Talia, and her carefully applied face powder and paint were smeared like mud across her cheeks. Nearby lay a fat, furry form John Tom at first thought might be a small beaver, but turned out to be another muskrat. An oddly creased, tri-cornered hat still rested on the motionless head, though it was tilted over the hidden eyes. A pair of cracked pince-nez spectacles, much like those worn by Clothahump, reflected the still small pools between the cobblestones. The iridescent blue silk suit he wore was rich enough to shine even in the dim light of the alley. One boot lay limp near a naked foot. His rhinestone inlaid mate lay up against the far wall. Talia ignored it as she rechecked the body with professional speed.
Blimey, love, what's all this now?
Mudge directed his attention nervously back toward the narrow plank of light from the street.
I ain't so sure we want to be compromising ourselves with business of this disreputable nature.
Shit, you're compromised just by standing there.
Talia heaved at the thick silk jacket.
Not that your reputation would suffer. Who are you lying to, Mudge? Yourself, me, or him? You know what the cops will do if they find you standing here flapping your whiskers.
Now, Talia, love.
I think we've exchanged enough pleasantries, Otter. I need you for muscle, not platitudes.
Now, I don't object to an occasional mugging, especially when the apple stands around begging to be plucked.
She pulled gold buttons off the comatose muskrat's trousers.
But murder's not my style.
I didn't mean to hurt anyone. I was just trying to keep them off. This fat little twerp decided to show off and resist, and I'll be damned if that fuzzy harridan he was with didn't try to help him. Between the two of them, I didn't have much time to get selective with the hilt of my sword, so I bashed him, and then she just sort of fainted.
Mudge moved over to study the fallen lady. While John Tom watched, the otter knelt and moved her head. There was a dark stain on the stones, and a matching one at the back of the furry skull.
This one's still bleeding, you know.
I told you she fainted. What the hell was I supposed to do? Dive underneath and break her fall?
Mudge moved away and performed a similar examination of the muskrat.
Now why would you have to do that, love, when these gentle rocks have done such a neat job of it for you?
His paws moved over the muskrat's face.
Still breathing, the two of them. Bloody lucky you are.
He looked up at her.
Right then, what is it you want of us?
She finally finished her scavenging and gestured back toward the street.
I've got a wagon tied around the corner on Sorbaleo Close. If I'd left it alley opposite, it would have blocked traffic, and worse, drawn attention to this little drama. Besides, it's too wide to fit in the alley entrance. Now, I can't carry that fat little bugger by myself. By the time I could drag the two of them to the close, some nosy body's sure to notice me and ask questions I couldn't answer. Even if I got lucky, I'm not sure I could heave these two bloated pumpkins up into the wagon.
That's for us, then. John Tom?
John Tom's thoughts were running into one another.
I don't know.
He was also worriedly watching the street. Foul-fighting police might appear at any minute, and what Talia had told Mudge about them being guilty by their mere presence at the scene of the crime had a trans-worldly ring of truth to it.
I'm not sure this is what Clothahump had in mind when he asked you to educate me.
Oh, a fine innocent you are, mate. As you of all people ought to know, life's incidents are dictated by fate and not neat planning. We can't stay here jabbering all night lest some idle patrol stumble on us. If you think the cop folk were hard on those poor innocent brawlers, consider what they're likely to do to those they think have assaulted respectable citizens. Is it then so much different where you come from?
No, I think they'd react about the same as here.
Mudge had moved to slip an arm around the waist of the unconscious squirrel cat, then flipped her over his shoulders.
I'll take charge of this one.
Thought you might. Here, let me help.
She caught the lady's legs just as the overburdened Mudge was about to lose his balance completely, then looked back at John Tom.
Don't just stand there gawking like a kid at a tree peep nook. Put that great gangling self of yours to work.
John Tom nodded, knelt, and managed to get his arms underneath the muskrat shape. The creature was as heavy as he appeared, and the weight made John Tom stagger. Working the mass around, he finally got the rotund burden in a fireman's carry.
Truth, 'tis muscles the lad has, if not yet overmuch common sense. Does he not, lass?
Let's get on with it.
On reaching the end of the alley, they hesitated. Talaya studied the street to the right while Mudge cautiously checked out the other end. Nothing was visible in the nebulous lamplight save cobblestones and lonely clumps of garbage. The night mist had thickened somewhat from earlier in the evening and bestowed on the fugitives a blessing beyond price. John Tom hurried after them, the globular body of the muskrat bouncing slightly on his shoulders. His feet carried him along a course of events he seemed powerless to alter. As he jogged up the street, he considered his present condition. In his short time in Lynchbenny, he'd nearly been assaulted by a beggar, took part in a pub riot, and now operated as an accessory to assault, robbery, and possibly murder.
I have to get back to Claw the Hump's tree, with or without Mudge's assistance. He has to try sending me home. I can't take another day of this.
Though he didn't know it, forces far greater than anything he could imagine continued to gather. The little sounds his boots made in the street puddles, faint echoes of the thunder to come. Eventually, they reached the rig. Mudge and Talaya heaved the motionless form of the squirrel cat onto the back of a low-slung buckboard. They froze at the sound of a wagon and waited in damp silence. It did not turn down their street.
Hurry up!
Talaya turned on Mudge.
Quit that and let's get out of here!
Mudge removed his hand from beneath the squirrel cat's dress. Despite Mudge's insistence that both victims were still alive and breathing, the muskrat felt very dead to the worried John Tom. That was now a major concern. He thought he might be able to talk his way out of being in the same wagon with a couple of robbery victims, but if either one of them died and they were stopped by the police, he doubted even Clothahump could help him. Talaya pulled a thick blanket of some woven gray material over the bodies. Then the three of them clambered into the wagon. There wasn't enough room there for all of them on the downsized platform. Talaya had the reins, and Mudge mounted alongside her, so John Tom had no choice but to vault the wagon rail and sit in the bed behind them.
"'Tis best anyway, mate. I know the word's hard, but as big as you are, we don't want to draw any more attention than we can get away with. Snuggle yourself down low, and we won't."
Hup! Talaya gave a flip of the reins. Just in time, too, as they rumbled down the street, another rider passed them close. The rider caught John Tom's attention, despite his exhaustion and confusion, and piqued his interest. He barely had time for a glance at the mist-shrouded figure. A white-faced, leather-clad rabbit sat astride a slim lizard traveling on all fours. The reptile had a long snout with two short tusks protruding upward from just back of the nostrils. Its eyes were searchlight bright and yellow with black-slit pupils. The rider sat in a saddle securely attached by multiple straps to the lizard's neck and belly. The extra ties necessary because of the animal's peculiar twisting side-to-side method of travel. It gave a snake-like appearance to the motion. The long tail curled up in a spiral, fastened to the reptilian rear with a decorative silver scroll. Blunt claws appeared to have been trimmed close to the quick. As he watched them vanish down the street, John Tom thought that the rider must be getting a smoother ride than any horse could provide, since all the movement was from side to side instead of up and down. That inspired him to inspect their own team, shifting around on the wood and trying to avoid kicking the terribly still forms beneath the gray blanket. He peered ahead beneath the raised wagon seat. The pair of creatures pulling the wagon were also reptilian, but as different from the rabbit's mount as he was from Mudge. Harnessed in tandem to the wagon, they were shorter and bulkier than the rabbit's mount. They had blunt muzzles and trudged in a deliberate, straightforward stride instead of the unusual twisting side-to-side movement of the other. Stumpy legs also covered less ground, and leathery stomach folds almost scraped the pavement. They were intended for pulling heavy loads rather than comfort or speed. Despite their bovine expressions, they were intelligent enough to respond to Talaya's occasional tugs on the reins. He studied the process of steering with interest, but there was no telling when such knowledge might prove useful. He was a good observer, one of the hallmarks of both lawyer and musician. Despite his discouragement about his surroundings, he instinctively continued to soak up local information.
Interesting.
The reins, for example, did not attach to bits in the lizard's mouths. Those thick jaws could have bitten through steel. Instead, they were joined to rings punched through each nostril. Gentle tugs at these sensitive areas were sufficient to guide the course of the lumbering gray. His attention shifted to a much closer and more intriguing figure. From his slouched position, he could see only flaming curls and the silver-threaded shape of her blouse and pants, the latter curving deliciously over the back edge of the wooden seat. Whether she felt his eyes or not, he couldn't tell, but once she glanced sharply back down at him. Instead of turning embarrassedly away, he met her stare. For a moment, they were eye to eye. That was all. No insults this time. When he stepped further, with a slight smile, more from instinct than intent, she simply turned away. She had not smiled back, but neither had that acid tongue heaped further abuse on her. He settled back against the wooden side of the wagon, trying to rest.
She's under a lot of pressure, enough to make anyone edgy and impolite. No doubt in less dangerous surroundings she's easier going. Or I'm deluding myself.
It was difficult to attribute such bellicosity to such a beautiful lady, not to mention the effect on a delicate male ego.
Shut up. You've got more important things to worry about. What are you going to tell Clotherhump when you see him again? It might be best to... I wonder how old she is.
Her diminutive size was the norm among local humans and hinted at nothing. He already knew her age to be close to his own because she didn't contradict his earlier comment about it. She seemed quite mature, but that could be a normal consequence of a life tougher than his own. He also wondered what she would look like naked, and had no reason to question his own maturity.
Think of your surroundings, Meriwether. You're trapped, tired, alone, and in real danger.
Alone. Well, he would try his best to be friends with her if she'd permit it.
I can't deny she's attractive, or every time she opens her mouth, she stifles any thought of friendship. We have to become friends.
She was human. That in itself was enough to make him homesick and desperate.
Maybe when we get rid of the body, she'll relax a little.
That prompted him to wonder and worry about just where they were taking their injured cargo and what they would do with it when they got there. The moan came from beneath the blanket behind him. He thought it came from the squirrel Ket, though he couldn't be certain. Talea saw his expression of concern.
There's a doctor out on the edge of town.
Glad to hear it. So there's a shred of soul to complement the beauty. Good.
He watched in silence as a delicately wrought two-wheeled buggy clopped past their wagon. The two moon-eyed wallabies in the cab were far too engrossed in each other to so much as glance at the wagon. Half-conscious now, the little squirrel was beginning to kick and roll in counterpoint to her low moans. If she reawakened fully, things would become awkward. He resolved, in spite of his desire to make friends with Talea, that he would bolt from the wagon rather than help her inflict any more harm. But after several minutes, the movement subsided, and the unfortunate victim relapsed into silence. They'd been traveling for half an hour and were still among buildings. Despite their plodding pace, it hinted that Lynchmany was a good-sized community. In fact, it might be even larger than he supposed, since he didn't know if they'd started from the city center or its outskirts. A two-story thatched roof structure of stone and crisscrossed wooden support beams loomed off to their left. It leaned as if for support up against a much larger, brooding stone building. Several smaller structures that looked to be individual homes stretched off into the distance. A few showed lamps over their doorways, but most slept peacefully in the clinging mist. No light showed in the two thick windows of the thatched building as Talea edged their wagon over close to it and brought it to a halt. The street lay empty, the only movement from the lizards and passengers, where the increasing chill turned their exhalations to momentarily thicker fog. He wondered again about the reptiles. Maybe they were hybrids with warm blood. If not, they behaved extremely active for cold-blooded creatures on such a cold night. He climbed out of the back of the wagon and looked at the doorway. An engraved sign hung from two hooks over the portal.
Nilanthos, physician and apothecary.
A smaller sign in the near window listed the ailments that could be treated by the doctor. Some of them were unfamiliar to John Tom, who knew a little of common disease but nothing whatsoever of veterinary medicine. Mudge and Talea both signaled urgently at him, so he moved out of the street and joined them by the door. It was recessed into the building, roofed over, and concealed from the street. They were hidden from casual view. Talaya ignored the loud bell pull and knocked on the milky bubble glass set into the upper part of the door. They waited tensely, but no one answered. At least no one passed them in the street. They all glanced nervously at the back of the wagon.
He's not in. I know a Dr. Palitha. He's clear across town, though, and I can't say how trustworthy he is. But if we've no one else to turn to...
Why I took up this profession, I never know. I do not never get a full night's sleep.
They could hear sounds inside. At that point, John Tom became truly scared for the first time since he materialized in this world. His first reactions were more disbelief and confusion than fear. Later ones turned to homesickness and terror of the unknown. But now, standing in an alien, darkened street, accomplice to assault and battery, and so utterly, totally alone, he started to shake. It was the kind of real, gut-chilling fear that doesn't frighten so much as it numbs reality. The whole soul and body turned stone cold, cold as the water at the bottom of a country well. Thoughts fixate on a single, simple, all-consuming thought.
I'm never gonna get out of this alive. I'm gonna die here. I wanna go home!
Oddly enough, a more distant fear began to return him to normal. The assault of paranoia began to fade as he considered his surroundings. A dark street, not unlike many others. Pavement, mist chill inside his nose. No fear in any of those. And what of his companions? A scintillating, if irascible, redhead and an oversized but intelligent otter, both of whom were allies and not enemies. Better to worry about Clothahump's tale of coming evil than his own miserable but hardly deadly situation.
What's the matter, mate? You're not gonna faint on me again, are you?
Just queasy. It's a nasty business, this.
No.
John Tom shook away the last clinging rags of fear.
It's not that. I'm fine, thanks.
She looked at him uncertainly a moment longer, then turned back to the door.
I hear something.
Footsteps sounded faintly from just inside.
Latch always is sticking.
Their attention directed away from him, John Tom dissected the fragment of Clothahump's warning, whose import just occurred to him. If something could bring a great evil from his own world into this one, an evil which none here, including Clothahump, could understand, why could not that same maleficent force reverse the channel one day and thrust some similar unmentionable horror on John Tom's own unsuspecting world? Preoccupied as it was with petty politics and intertribal squabbles between nations, could it survive a powerful assault of incomprehensible and destructive magic from this world? No one would believe it, just as he didn't believe his first encounters with Clothahump's magic. According to the aged wizard, an evil moved abroad in this place and time that made the minions of Nazism look like Sunday school children. Would such an evil remain content with consuming this world alone, or would it reach out for further, perhaps simpler, conquests? As a student of history, he knew the answer. The appetite of evil far exceeds that of the benign. Success feeds rather than sates its appetite for destruction. That truth had plagued mankind throughout its history. What he saw around him since coming to this world did not lead him to think it would be otherwise with the force Clothahump so feared. Somewhere in this world, a terror beyond his imagining swelled and prepared. He pictured Clothahump again, the squat, almost comical turtle shape with its plastron compartments, the hexagonal little glasses, the absent-minded way of speaking, and he forced himself to consider him beyond the mere physical image. He remembered the glimpses of Clothahump's real power. For all the insults Pog and Mudge levied at the wizard, they remained tinged with respect. So on those rounded, indeed non-existent, shoulders rested possibly not only the destiny of one, but of two worlds, this and John Tom's own, the latter dreaming innocently along in a universe of predictable physics. He looked down at his watch, no longer ticking, remembered his lighter, which flared efficiently one last time before running out of fuel. The laws of science functioned here as at home. Mudge was unfamiliar with the spell, the physics that operated his watch and lighter. Research here took a divergent path. Science in his own, magic in this one. The words rang similar, not the methodology of application. Would not evil spells as well as benign ones operate to bewildering effect in his own world? If such was the case, then he no longer had a safe place to turn to.
If that's true, what am I doing here? I ought to be back at the tree. Not pleading to be sent home, but offering what help I can to claw the hump. Even if it's only my size and strength.
For if the turtle was not senile, if he was correct about the menace John Tom now saw threatening him everywhere, then there was a good chance he would die, and his parents, and his brother in Seattle, and many more.
No.
The enormity of it was too much.
I'm no world shaker. One thing at a time, kid. You can't save worlds if you're locked up in a filthy local jail, puking your lunch all over yourself because the local cops don't play by the rules. And you surely will if you don't listen to Mudge and help this lovely lady. I'm all right. We'll take things easy, pursue the internal logic. Just like researching a test case for class.
What's that, mate?
Nothing.
The otter eyed him a moment longer, then turned back to the door.
Life is a series of tests. Where did I read that?
Not in the laws of ancient Peru, or basic torts, or California contracts. But he was ready for it now, for whatever sudden turns and twists life might throw at him. Feeling considerably more at peace with himself and the universe, he stood facing the entrance and waited to be told what to do next. The stubborn knob finally turned. A shape stood inside, staring back at them. Once it had been massively proportioned, but the flesh had sagged with age. The arms were nearly as long as the otter's whole body. One held a lantern high enough to shower light down even on John Tom's head. The old orangutan's whiskers shaded from russet to gray. His glasses were round and familiar, with golden metal rims. John Tom decided that either wizardly spells for improving eyesight were unknown, or else local magic had not progressed that far. A flowing nightgown of silk and lace, with a decidedly feminine cast, clad that simian shape. John Tom was careful not to snicker. Nothing surprised him anymore.
Well, what is it at this hour? You, don't I know you?
You should. Talia of the High Winds and Moonflame. I did a favor for you once.
Nilanthos nodded slowly.
Yes. I remember you now. Talia of the police records and the dubious reputation.
Talia was not upset.
Then along with my reputation, you recall those 6 vials of drugs I got for you? The ones whose possession is frowned upon by the sorcerer societies. An exclusion extended even to... physicians?
Yes, yes, of course, I remember. The debt is a debt. What is your problem that you must call me up from sleep so late?
We have 2 problems, actually.
She started for the wagon.
Keep the door open.
As John Tom placed the muskrat on the table in the examining room, Nilanthos prepared himself to provide medical aid.
Oh, if either of these pair is dead, we will all sweat a little.
Then his eyes widened as he turned and saw the face of the muskrat on the table. He apparently recognized the creature.
Good God! It's Councilman Avelion. Could not you have picked a less dangerous victim? He could have us all drawn and quartered.
He won't. I'm depending on you to see to that. You and your good nature.
Nilanthos moved to spark the oil lamps lining the surgery.
You might have been better off letting them die.
And what if they hadn't? What if they'd lived and remembered who attacked them? It was dark, but I can't be sure they'd never recognize me again.
Yes, yes, I see what you mean.
He stood at a nearby sink and was washing long-fingered hands carefully.
Well then, what story should I give them when they come around?
He pulled on gloves and returned to the large central table on which the 2 patients had been deposited. John Tom leaned back against a wall and watched with interest. Mudge paced the surgery and looked bored. Actually, he kept one eye on Nilanthos while searching for anything he could swipe undetected. With a more personal interest in the welfare of the 2 victims, Talia stood close to the table as Nilanthos commenced his preliminary examination.
Tell them they had an accident.
What kind of accident?
They ran into something.
He looked over at her skeptically, and she shrugged.
My fist. And the iron chain I had wrapped around it. And maybe a wall. Look, you're a doctor. Think of something reasonable. Convince them. Some passers-by found them and brought them to you.
Why a primate as attractive as yourself would indulge in such nefarious doings is more than I can fathom, Talia.
She moved back from the table.
You fix them up and let me take care of me.
Several minutes passed, and the examination continued.
The councilman will be fine. He has only a mild concussion and minor cuts and bruises. I know. I will make arrangements to have him deposited on his front doorstep by a couple of rats I know, who will do that sort of work without letting curiosity get in their way.
He turned his gaze on the squirrel cat, long fingers moving carefully through her hair.
This one is not so good. There is a chance of a skull fracture. That means possible internal injuries.
She seems lively enough.
Appearances can deceive, especially with head injuries.
He applied disinfectant before bandaging the wound. The bandage promptly began to show a dark stain.
I'll just have to watch her carefully. Do you by any chance know her?
Talia shook her head.
Neither do I. The councilman's lady for the evening. Probably a lady of the evening, too. She'll be angry when she regains consciousness, but no danger. I'll see to that, too.
Good.
Talia started for the exit, hesitated, and put a hand on the orang's broad shoulder.
Thanks, Nelanthos. You've more than cancelled out our debt. Now I owe you. Call on me if you need my services.
The physician showed a wide simian leer.
Professionally, I mean.
The leer broadened.
You are impossible, Nelanthos.
She feigned a swing at him.
Do not strike the doctor while he is in the process of performing his healing duties.
That's a laugh. But I still owe you.
Honor among thieves, is that it?
He looked seriously down at the squirrel cat and the now badly stained bandage wrapped around her skull.
Very well. For now it's best if you all get out of here.
He stared at Mudge. The otter nodded and moved away from the slip-catch-latched drug and narcotics case where he'd been idling the past several minutes.
What's the hurry?
Mudge put a hand on his arm and pulled him along.
Be you daft, mate. We've got to get out of town.
But I don't... I thought...
He barely remembered to duck as they exited the surgery.
If Dr. Nelanthos is going to take care of things, why do we have to run?
Cool. You can take away the worries as far as those two in there be concerned. But someone else might have seen us. They might even now be reporting us to the police. Your size makes us too conspicuous, lad. We have to leave, especially after that fight in the Pearl Possum.
But I still don't see...
Not now, mate.
They were out in the dark street again.
Come on, John Tom. Don't make trouble.
He halted and stared open-mouthed at her.
Me make trouble? I've been the innocent victim of trouble ever since I set foot in this stinking lousy excuse for a world.
Easy now, mate. Don't be saying something you may be sorry for later.
John Tom's carefully constructed calm had lasted about 10 minutes.
I don't regret anything I have to say.
Talia looked back toward town, clearly upset.
I want to see some of the goodness, the kindness this world should have.
Should have? By whose determination?
By the...
What could he say? By rights of legend? What legend? By logic? Mudge was right.
Oh, never mind. So we're fugitives. So I make us conspicuous. That's the way it is. Let's get going, then.
He vaulted into the back of the wagon. Mudge climbed into the front seat, caught Talia's questioning glance, and could only shrug blankly. She snapped the reins. The somnolent lizards came awake, leaned forward into their reins. The wagon resumed its steady forward motion. John Tom noted that they were headed out of town, as Mudge had insisted they must. Houses decorated with little gardens slipped past. No lights showed in their windows at this hour. They passed the last street lamp. Here the road turned from cobblestone to gravel. Even that gave way to a muddy track only a little while later. All light had vanished behind them. It was deep night, or early morning now. The mist continued to dog them, keeping them wet and chilled. Never is the winter so cloying as at night. Among the occupants of the wagon, only John Tom had a lingering concern for the greater night that threatened to do more to the world than chill it.
Talia and Mudge live in the moment. They can't grasp the significance of Clawthon's visions.
He huddled deeper under the gray blanket, ignoring the persistent aroma of the squirrel cat's perfume. It clashed with the smell of dried blood. Distant thunder signaled the last vestiges of the night's storm. It helped them bid farewell to Lynchpenny. John Tom felt no regret at their leave-taking. Soon they were in the woods. Oaks and elms showed familiar silhouettes against the more melodious boles of fell tree and coronet vine. The latter generated an oboesque sob as if pleading for the advent of day in the refreshing heat of the sun. For hours they plodded steadily on. The road wound like a stream around the hills, taking advantage of the lowest route, never cresting more than an occasional rise. Small lakes and ponds sometimes flanked the trail, inhabited by a vast assortment of aquatic lizards. Each glowed a different color, some green, others red or pink, still others a rich azure. Each bubble of sound was accompanied by an increase in light. The ponds were full of chirping searchlights that drifted from branch to bank. John Tom watched the water and its luminescent reptilians fade behind them. The ponds became a brook, which ran fast and friendly alongside the rutted wagon track. Resignation gave way once more to his natural curiosity.
Well, we're long out of town. Where are we going?
Rising to his knees, he reached out a hand to steady himself on the seat of the jouncing wagon. It gave an unexpected lurch to the right, and he caught Talea's side instead of the back of the seat. Hastily, he moved his fingers, but she had neither moved away nor protested.
Somewhere where we can't be trapped. But God knows, even a blithering Lynchpenny cop could piss and track the ruts of this wagon at the same time. Like any other creature, we retreat to a lair, and we don't fight unless we're cornered. And where we're going, not even the police will dare come.
I ain't sure I'd agree to that. 'Tis more of an uneasy truce.
Nonetheless, we're far more likely to be safe there than any place else.
John Tom gazed in question.
We're going to the local branch of the Intra-County Association of Disadvantaged, Self-Employed Artisans and Underachievers.
Thieves Hall.
They spent the rest of the night curled beneath the thick blanket in the back of the wagon. While Mudge and Talia slept, John Tom lay on his back and studied the night sky, framed by the overhanging branches of the trees. Some of the constellations overhead looked familiar, though out of place. Location as well as season differed here. The easily recognizable shape of Orion, standing stalwart as ever against the interstellar vastness, gave him comfort. The trees, at last, lulled him into a deep, dreamless sleep. John Tom awoke to a welcome sun filtering down through the leaves and a weight on his left shoulder. Turning his head, he saw Talia snuggled up against him. She slept on her side, resting on his shoulder, one arm thrown limply across his chest. He had mixed feelings about disturbing the sculpture. However, they had a destination. John Tom moved a little. Her eyes fluttered. Her body stirred. She blinked, simultaneously taking note of both him and proximity. As she pulled away, she rubbed sleep from her eyes.
Easy night. Though I've had softer beds.
Me too.
To his surprise, John Tom saw Mudge already wide awake. He had no idea how long the otter lay there watching them.
Best we be on about our business. The Lynchpenny lockups ain't particularly persistent. But if it was a slow night, a few ambitious tots might have elected to come follow.
He stood and gestured back down the road.
Personally, I think we're well clear of them. You never can be sure.
Right.
Talia climbed into the driver's seat.
Best never to take chances with a skunk.
It was noon when Talia indicated they'd arrived. John Tom peered ahead between her and the otter.
I don't see anything.
What did you think? A place like Thieves' Hall would announce itself with flying banners and a brass band.
After a half-mile walk, they came to a crude corral filled with an astonishing assortment of reptilian mounts. Several hundred yards off to the right of this open-air stable, Talaya located a metal doorway. It lay half-hidden beneath the roots of several massive oaks and was set directly into the rock face of a low-browed cliff. When the door opened, a guard led them down a long, low tunnel, eventually leading to a large cavern, filled with a noisy, raunchy, squalling crowd that made the patrons of the Pearl Possum look like nursery schoolers on their first day away from home. John Tom saw enough sharpened steel in that one room to fight a small war. A fair amount of dried blood on the stone floor showed those instruments got frequent use. The noise was close to deafening, not to mention the odor. He'd almost come to ignore the animal smells, but in that tight, poorly ventilated chamber, populated as it was by a less than usually hygienic assembly, it was overpowering.
What do we do now?
First, we find the president of the local chapter and pay our protection money. That allows us to stay here. Then, we find the piece of unoccupied tunnel. There are hundreds of them honeycombing this hillside. We set up temporary housekeeping and lie low until the councilman has a chance to forget what happened to him. Of course, he may buy Nilanthus's explanation, but I wouldn't put it past his type to check out any citizens' reports for that night. That's where we could have trouble, remember? We'll wait here a couple of weeks until it all turns to memory mush, then we can safely leave.
Mudge caught John Tom's look of distress.
Don't look so ill, mate. Crikey, it's only for a couple of weeks. Lynch bunny cops have memories as brief as their courage. But it do behoove us to stay out of sight of casual travellers for a while. None save the completely daft are likely to come within leagues of this spot.
John Tom focused on well-used swords and knives.
I can't imagine why not.
As it turned out, they did not utilize Thieves' Hall for 2 weeks. It was less than a day before John Tom made his mistake. It didn't seem like a mistake at the time, and afterward he was too confused to be sorry. There was a game, common in Lynchbenny and well-known among those who preyed upon the townsfolk. It involved the use of triangular dice and a circle, therewith no hidden complexities. A good student like John Tom had no trouble picking it up after a few hours of careful study. After a few more hours, he had a considerable pile of winnings in front of him, including a she-wolf he didn't want any part of.
What's happening here, mate? I leave you alone for a bit, you managed to upset the entire place.
I don't understand. I've been winning all day.
That's good.
And I just won that.
He indicated the she-wolf.
For a couple of nights.
Oh, well, that's very good. So what's your problem, mate?
I don't want her. Don't you understand? It's not that she's unattractive or anything. It's just that I can't do it, Mudge. I'm not prejudiced, but something inside me just can't.
Easy now, mate. I understand. It's part of your strange customs, no doubt, and you're the loser for it.
Well, then tell them that. Tell them where I'm from. Explain to them that I'm...
Mudge put a hand momentarily over John Tom's mouth.
Hush, lad. If they think that you're from some other land, no matter how alien, you won't any longer have their protection. As it be, they think you're a local footpad like Talia and myself.
His eyes noted the weight dragging down the hem of John Tom's cape.
And judging from what you've won from some here, they'd be more than happy to see you made fair game. You wouldn't last 20 seconds.
He pulled at an arm.
Come on now. Quiet and confidence, the words, while they're still just talking about what to do.
They were bumped and even spat upon, but Mudge and Talaya managed to hustle their thoroughly confused friend out of the gambling chamber, through the tunnels, and back out the iron door that sealed off the hall from the outside world. It was mid-morning outside. John Tom suddenly realized how exhausted he was. He must have played through the night. That explained why he hadn't seen Talaya or Mudge. They'd been sleeping. But it was time-deceptive inside Thieves' Hall, where the lamps burned around the clock. Much in keeping with the activities of the members.
Why didn't you go with her? Now look at us. Forced out of the one refuge where we'd be impregnable.
She stalked on ahead, searching the nearby corral for their team and wagon.
I suppose I should have lost.
John Tom and Mudge had to hurry to keep pace with her.
That would have made you happy, wouldn't it?
It would be better than this. Where do we go now? When you're turned out of Thieves Hall, there's no place else to run to, and we haven't been in hiding near long enough. We'll still be fresh in the minds of citizens and police if anyone noticed us. Damn it all!
She jumped the fence and kicked at the flank of an innocent riding lizard.
It's too bad you weren't around, Mudge. You could have played that last round for me.
It don't work that way, mate. You had to play it out yourself from what I heard. 'Tis a pity your peculiar customs forced you to insult that lovely lady's honor. You refused her. I couldn't have substituted myself for you otherwise, much willing as I would have been.
I can't believe she was treating herself willingly like that.
Blimey, lad, 'tis bloody ignorant you be about women. She did it for love of her fox chap. Couldn't you see that? And so when you refused her, you insulted him as well. You don't know much about the leanings of ladies, do you?
That's ridiculous. Of course I... No. No, not a great deal, Mudge. My energies have been pretty much focused on intellectual pursuits. That's one reason I wanted to be a musician so badly. Musicians don't seem to have to worry about women.
There not be much pleasure in ignorance, mate. You're a damn sight better off understanding the whys and wherefores of what's going on.
Mudge nodded ahead.
Now, have a look at dear Talia there. And don't tell me you don't find her attractive.
John Tom nodded.
Well then, eh? Close enough quarters we've been living in these past few days, and I haven't seen you so much as lean close to her. Me she knows and won't let near, but you're a new factor.
You've got to be kidding.
He watched that mane of red hair bob and weave its way among the herd.
If I so much as touched her, she'd split me from brain to belly.
Don't be so sure, mate. You've already confessed your ignorance, you know.
And you're the expert, I suppose?
I get by on experience, yes. Not much time for that now, but think on what I just said.
I will. Mudge, what she said to us about having no place to go, are we that desperate?
Hard to say, mate. Depends on whether anyone reported our late-night doings in Lynchpenny. But we'd best move on to somewhere else for a while.
I know where I want to go.
Hey!
Something stung the side of his face. He turned and looked in shock at Mudge.
A long way to reach with an open palm. Now you listen well, mate. I've told you before, and I don't aim to waste time on it again. These maudlin sorrowings for yourself have to stop. You're here. We can't get you back to where you belong. Clotherhump can't or won't get you back. That's bloody well it. And the sooner you get used to it, the better it'll go for you. Or do you expect me to wet nurse you through your next 60 years?
60 years? Odd how he hadn't thought of his stay here in terms of years, much less decades. There was always the thought that he could be going home tomorrow, or the next day. But if Clotherhump's genius ran as erratic as Mudge insisted, he might never get home. The wizard could die tomorrow. That night in Lynchpenny, outside Dr. Nalanthos's, he'd reached a temporary accommodation with his situation. Maybe Mudge was right. Time he made that accommodation permanent.
Try to regard it like negative thinking for an exam. That way, you're only satisfied if you fail, happy with a 50, and ecstatic with 100. That's how you're going to have to start thinking of your life.
Right now, he lived a zero. The sooner he got used to it, the less disappointed he'd be if Clotherhump proved unable to send him back. Back to the lazy mental meanderings of school, the casual tripe mumbled by directionless friends, the day-to-day humdrum existence he led that inaccessibility now made tempting.
Zero. Remember the zero.
Goddamn rotten sons of bitches! Shitholes, all of them!
The cry came from the other side of the corral. He and Mudge hurried through the packed animals. But Talia was not in danger. Instead, she sat tiredly on a smooth rock while riding lizards of varying size and shape milled nervously around her.
Stinking sneaky bastards!
John Tom started to say something, but turned at a touch on his arm. Mudge put a finger to his whiskers and shook his head slowly. They waited while the bile burned itself up. She finally looked up and seemed to take notice of them. Then she rose and swept an arm around the corral.
Our wagon's gone. I've been through the whole glade and it's not here. Neither's our team. Do you know what I went through to steal that team?
The fox's friends might have slipped out and run it off to help him cover his losses. Or it might have been done as punishment for the insult we did the she-wolf.
I'll fry the gizzards of whoever's responsible.
She started back toward the hall. Mudge intercepted her quickly. She pushed at him, tried to dodge around, but he was as heavy as she and far faster. Eventually, she just stood there, glaring at him.
Be reasonable, love. We barely slipped out of there without having to cut anyone. We can't go back in. Anger's no substitute for another sword. Even if we did get back in clear and free, we're just guessing as to who's responsible. We can't be sure it's Mosul or his friends.
You're right, Otter, as usual.
She slumped down on the mossy earth and leaned back against a fence rail.
So much, then, for honor among thieves.
I'm sorry.
Jun Tom sat down next to her.
It was my fault. But if it means anything, I'll be happy to pay you back for the cart.
He jiggled the clinking hem of his cape meaningfully.
Don't be ridiculous. I stole it. You needn't worry about paying back what you don't owe.
We could buy someone else's cart.
Good transportation's dearer to a thief than any amount of money. We could buy such in town, but not here.
Well then, why don't we steal some of these?
Well, that's not a bad idea, mate. You're starting to adapt. Save for one little complication.
He looked to his right. At first, John Tom saw nothing. Then he noticed the little knot of figures that had appeared outside the hall entrance. Puffs of smoke rose from the small crowd, and he could see an occasional glance in their direction.
But they don't know which cart or steeds are ours. If we acted like we knew what we were doing, they couldn't tell we were up to anything.
On the other hand, we don't know that we might not pick on one of their mounts. A single shout could bring the whole of thieves all out on us.
A pox on this!
Talaya sprung to her feet.
So we walk, but we're going back to see this wizard of yours. He's bound to put us up for a few days. Might even be safer than the hall. And we can even pay him.
No, hold on a minute, Lav. If we return there so soon, I'll have to admit I've run into some difficulties in educating this lad.
Difficulties? You've already managed to involve me in a local tavern brawl, a police matter, and you!
John Tom looked at Talaya.
In a mugging and a robbery. Two robberies. I suppose I have to include the cart and team now.
Count it any way you like, John Tom, but we can't go to town just yet, and we can't use the hall. I'm not about to strike off into the forest towards somewhere distant like Fifeover or Timsquitty. Besides, they cooperate with the Lynchbinny cops.
Mudge folded his arms.
Be that as it may, I'm not going back to Clotherhamps. The old bugger's too unpredictable for my comfort.
Suit yourself.
She looked up at John Tom.
I think you know the way. You afraid of Clotherhump too?
Bet your ass I am. But I don't think he's the vengeful type. And I can't think of anything else to do.
She gestured expansively.
After you, John Tom.
He turned and started out of the corral, heading south and hoping his sense of direction wasn't too badly distorted by the time they'd spent riding the night. Mudge hesitated until they were nearly out of sight.
Why I ever let that old wizard...
He sprinted anxiously after the retreating humans. Thieves' Hall lay southeast of Lynchbinny Town. They had to cross the local roads carefully, for according to Talaya, you never knew when you might encounter a police patrol out for bandits. They also had to make time to hunt and gather food. It was 3 days of hard walking before some of the forests started to look familiar to Mudge. Now they stood by the side of a muddy, narrow road when John Tom noticed a large sack caught in the crook of a pair of boulders. He also saw the sparkle of sunlight on metal.
Your eyes are good, John Tom.
They fell on the sack like three jackals on the half-gnawed carcass of a zebra. The sack held trade goods, glass beads, some semi-precious gems that might have been garnets or tourmalines, and some scrolls. Talaya threw the latter angrily aside as they searched the sack for other valuables. There were more scrolls, some clothing, and several musical instruments. John Tom picked up a set of pipes attached to a curved gourd.
Hell!
Talaya sat back against the rocks. She picked up the empty sack and threw it over her shoulder.
Double hell! Even when we find some lucky, it turns out to be deceptive.
Mudge inspected the jewelry.
These might fetch 2 or 3 golds from a fair fence.
How delightful. You just whistle up a fair fence and we'll have a go at it.
The otter shrugged.
Never know till you try.
He tucked the jewelry into the pouch at his waist and caught Talia eyeing him.
Oh, you don't trust me to share out?
No, but it's not worth fighting over.
She rubbed her left calf.
My feet hurt.
John Tom had set down the gourd flute and picked up the largest of the three instruments. This one had six strings running in a curve across a heart-shaped resonator. Three triangular openings were cut into the box. At the top of the curved wires were tuning knobs. Near the base of the heart box resonator was a set of six smaller metal strings, a miniature of the larger upper set. 12 strings altogether. He considered the arrangement thoughtfully.
Let's see, the smaller set wouldn't be much good except for plucking the more delicate higher notes. So the larger sextet is probably strummed.
Except for the extra set of tiny strings, it looked something like a plastic guitar left too long in an oven. Talia picked up one of the flute things, then tossed it away. The second seemed more to her liking. She finished testing it, slipped it into her belt, and started off back into the forest. Mudge followed, but John Tom, absorbed in the peculiar guitar, hung behind. Eventually she paused, turned to face him, and waited.
What's holding you back, Larklegs?
He smiled as though he hadn't heard her and turned his attention back to the instrument.
That's a jua. Don't tell me you can play that.
Actually, the lad has made claims to being something of a musician.
Mudge studied John Tom's obvious interest, hopefully.
You always have said that you sounded better with instrumental accompaniment, mate.
I know. I remember.
John Tom ran his fingers over the upper-level strings. The sound was not very alien. He plucked once again at the lower strings. The curved arm running out from the heart-shaped box he found difficult to cradle. The instrument had been designed to fit around a much broader chest than his own. The short strap that ran from the top of the arm to the base of the resonator helped a little, however. Letting the instrument hang naturally, he found that by leaning forward he could get at both sets of strings. It hurt his back a little, but he thought he could get used to it. He used both hands, trying to strum the upper strings while plucking in counterpoint at the lower. Talia turned away and started off again, Mudge in tandem and John Tom bringing up the rear. His heart still hurt more than his feet, but the music helped. Gradually, he discovered how to swing his arm in an arc instead of straight down in order to follow the curves of the bar and strings. As always, the tranquilizing sounds made him feel better, lifting his spirits as well as his adrenaline level. It was late afternoon when Talia edged closer to him, listening a while longer to his almost music.
John Tom, are you a spell singer?
A what?
A spell singer.
She nodded toward the otter, walking a few yards ahead of them.
Mudge says that the wizard Clotherham brought you into our world because he thought you were a wizard who can help him in sorcerer matters.
That's right. Unfortunately, I'm in pre-law.
Wizards don't make those kinds of mistakes.
Well, this one sure did.
Then you're not.
A spell singer is a wizard who can only make magic through music.
That's a nice thought. I wish it were true of me. I've had a few people tell me that despite my less than mesmerizing tenor, I can make a little music magic, but not the kind you're thinking of.
How do you know you can't? Maybe Clotherhump was right all along.
This is silly, Talia. I'm no more a magician than I am any other sort of success. Hell, I'm having a hard enough time trying to play this thing and walk at the same time, what with that long staff strapped to my back. It keeps trying to slide free and trip me. Besides, I can't even get this to sound right. I can't play something I can't even tune.
Have you used all the dew-tips?
When he looked blank, she indicated the tuning knobs. He nodded.
And what about the dew-deeps?
Again, the blank gaze, and this time he got a surprise. Set into a recess in the bottom of the instrument, she pointed out two knobs. He hadn't noticed them before, given his preoccupation with the strings and the dew-tips, as she called them. He fiddled with the pair. Each somehow contracted tiny metal and wood slats inside the resonator. One adjusted crude treble, the other lowered everything a couple of octaves, and corresponded very roughly to a bass modulator. He looked closely at them, and then looked again. Instead of the usual treble and bass, they read tremble and mass. But they definitely improved the quality of the duo's sound. The two started walking to catch up to Mudge.
Now you should try.
Try what? What kind of song would you like to hear? I've been through this with Mudge, so if you want to take the risk of listening to me...
I'm not afraid. Try not for the sound. Try for the magic. It's not like a wizard as great as Clothahump, even if his powers are failing, to make such a mistake.
Try for the magic. Huh. Try for the sound.
That's what the lead bass player for a famous group once told him. The guy was higher than the Pope when John Tom accidentally ran into him in a hall before a concert playing to 20,000. Stuttering, hardly able to talk to so admired a musician, he mumbled the usual fatuous request for advice to a struggling young artist.
Hey man, you gotta try for the sound, yeah? You gotta try for the sound!
That hazily uttered parable proved sufficiently unspecific to stick in his mind, setting John Tom to trying for the sound for years. He hadn't come close to finding it. Most would-be musicians never did. Maybe finding the sound was the difference between the pro and the amateur. Or maybe it was only a matter of getting too stoked to notice the difference.
Eh, what the hell?
He fiddled a little longer with the pseudo-treble bass controls. They certainly improved the music.
Why not play something difficult? Stretch yourself, John Tom. You got nothing to lose. These two critics can't change your career one way or the other.
There was only one sound he'd ever hoped to reach for. So he reached. Thereafter, as always, he lost himself in the music, forgetting the watching Talia, forgetting Mudge, forgetting the place and time of where he was, forgetting everything except reaching for the sound. He played as hard as he could on that strange curved instrument. It lifted him, juiced him with the natural high playing always brought him. As he played, it seemed to him that he could hear the friendly, prickling music of his own old electric guitar. His nerves quivered with the pleasure. His ears rang with the familiarity of it. He felt truly happy, cradling and caressing that strange instrument, forgetting his surroundings and his troubles. Spellsinger is continued on the next CD.